All right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. And welcome to the SLS Cast, episode 5.
The big V. Oh, I didn't know this was going to be a sophisticated show. Holy shit.
I know.
I'm going to have to pull out my index of Roman numerals.
That's right. Thanks to the Super Bowl, though, and Don Childe pointing this out, we have learned to count to, you know, in the 40s now, in Roman numerals because of the Super Bowl. So, get that high. That's good. As a matter of fact, it made me happy, though, when the happiest thing for me in terms of the millennium was I would be able to finally tell when movies were made, because we just got MM instead of, you know, MXMCVXLVIIII² and another couple of V's and Z and A on there. And yeah. I'm like, how the hell, what, you know, they got really long with those Roman numerals.
They did.
So, definitely happy that now I just know it's MMXI. See? 2011.
Or they can just put 2011.
Some of the movies are doing that nowadays.
They are.
People,
I mean,
are too stupid.
And I think that is the case. I do. I mean, yeah, okay. Well, we'll just go with that. So how was your weekend? Or your week, I guess, or weekend. Or how about how is
I don't know. I don't know. This is the latest we've ever recorded for, you know, obviously it's a podcast. We do editing, whatever. That's wonderful. But this is definitely after dark.
I know. We should be on Showtime or Cinemax right now.
Skinemax. The SLS Cast.
I mean, I think it'll definitely reflect on our 3 squared for.
I think so. I know we're gonna. That's exactly what I was about to say, because, you know, maybe we should. You know, the research. Oh, the research for our 3 squared segment for next week is gonna be so hard.
Oh,
can you say hard?
Oh, I need to burn my eyes with hot stones right now, because I got this. Oh, I hope. Yeah, okay, so we're not going to meet up to watch any, you know, Basic Instinct. Hopefully you know that. We will be doing this research on our own in the comfort of our own
separate homes.
Separate homes.
Yes,
exactly.
Separate homes. When you hear what the 3 squared segment for next week is, you will completely understand what we have been joking about. But until then, you can just kind of laugh awkwardly at what we've been joking about, but that's okay. That's why we do what we do. But yeah, my week, yeah, you know, all right, it's okay. It was a normal week. You know, went and saw Horrible Bosses with you, and
yeah, that was fun.
And other than that, not really much exciting going on. Just regular old life.
Indeed, yeah. I went and saw. I took the grandpa to go see Super 8 last Monday, and I will have to say I love that movie after seeing it a second time.
Like, did you see where you could see the alien's face this time?
Yeah, through the puddle? Yeah, I totally saw that. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I have a greater appreciation for the movie, and I noticed a few things that I missed from the movie than, you know, from when I saw it the first time around. So it was really enjoyable. I really, really enjoyed it. Except for the theater I was in and the type of people in the theater. But besides that, you know, it was it's a spectacular movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it, especially the second time around.
Outstanding. All right. Well, cool. We got a ton of stuff to get to, and I would like to try and see about keeping this episode to be our shortest episode yet. So let's see if we can do that. We're going to jump right into movie news. Change it up on you. We're going to change it up on you. I'm going to go first, and Tim's going to finish out.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
Yes, that's right. That's right. You know why? Because you made me watch the Jack and Jill movie trailer. That's why.
We'll get to that.
That's right. You will get to that in your own time, and then other people can suffer through it as well. Interesting little tidbit news. Kate Hudson gave birth to her baby boy. Doesn't appear to have a name yet, but hey, just thought that might be fun for people who like to follow Kate Hudson. I personally think she's hot, and was just sad that I didn't get a chance to make that baby with her. So
little park bench Hudson,
I guess
that'll be his name. Park bench
probably be a better name this time around because she's with Matt Bellamy versus last time when she was with Chris Robinson of Black Crowes fame. So, who is an amazing singer, by the way? Second little thing, Time Magazine did a fun little top 10 quotable movies. I'm going to put that as a link there so that you can check that out. But it covers...
Big Lebowski?
Yes, Big Lebowski is on the list. I think it came in at like number 2. But I mean, it has Napoleon Dynamite on there, Clueless, Glengarry Glenn Ross, like Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So, I mean, they got lots of fun, lots of stuff. And it's the top 10 quotable movies. So it's not just quotes necessarily that are, where you go, well, wait a minute, I think this quote, it's not just go ahead, punk, make my day, because it's movies that have tons of quotable material in it. So what got me to stick it out to the end was the 10th movie on the list, or number 10 on the list, was Napoleon Dynamite. And when the clip they give you, and this is the only one I'll give away, so that you guys can check it out on your own if you like, the only one they give away is when Kip comes in, and they got the girl, and she's trying to sell all of the... bracelets and stuff that she makes at Napoleon's door, and Kip's sitting on the couch out of the frame, and she's like, so, I'm trying to sell these things so I can save up for college, and Kip just jumps right in, your mom goes to college, and just about died. And it's just the funniest thing, and that's the clip they give, and yeah. So
can you do that Kip voice one more time?
I don't know, I'm actually getting a little upset because, she won't show me any, full body pics or anything. It's just been like a face pic, and I'm getting a little bit upset. Second from last was something that I found and thought it was just absolutely hilarious. No matter what side of the lockout, the NFL lockout you're on, there was a Field of Dreams 2 movie trailer that has been attributed to Funny or Die. .com. I found it through Yahoo Sports, actually, but you can get it in any number of places. We'll have a link for it. And it essentially is just recreating Field of Dreams, but referencing it with the lockout. And they've got amazing cameos in this trailer. And Taylor Lautner, actually, I was surprised because this actually kind of gave me a little bit of hope that Taylor Lautner can actually act. So yeah. I was... For those of you who only know him loosely from Twilight, which...
And that's it.
Yeah. It turns out he can act a little bit, so I might actually go see something else he would do now. Last but not least, for me, was something that I thought was exceptionally quirky and could not pass up, is Hollywood now has a new billion-dollar star. And, you got the people who are up there on the list, like Bruce Willis.
Tom Cruise is a billionaire.
Yeah, Tom Cruise. So, joining this rather elite club is Ken Jeong. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, for people
Ill?
Who watch television. Yeah. Kim Jong-il. but no, Ken Jeong, the guy that you might have remembered from movies like Knocked Up or perhaps the TV show Community, in which he played Professor Chang. He is, and I think he's like just deceptively funny. He, because of him starring in movies like Transformers, Dark of the Moon, and Hangover 2, those two specific movies broke the billion-dollar mark. And Transformers isn't even done yet. So, he's actually on the list of people who have been in movies, and their movies have collectively grossed over $1 billion. But here's what's most impressive. He's a doctor. He is a legitimate doctor, MD.
Really?
Yes, and was before he got in with Judd Apatow and all that kind of stuff.
Huh.
All right, so that was all the news that I had. I thought that I thought was interesting. And carry on.
All right, well, I'm just going to go down the old list here with fisticuffs high. Johnny Depp is close to signing on for the fifth Pirates of the Caribbean film.
Caribbean, even.
Or even the Caribbean, depending on what you would prefer. The next one is that, okay, so Transformers 3 just came out, and Shia LaBeouf does not want to continue on. So if you have to, you know, think of another actor to take over the franchise, do you think Jason Statham would be, I don't know, the best possible route to take?
The best possible choice, no. But fun, entertaining, and absolutely able to kick ass right alongside of him, yes.
All right. Yeah, I can probably. Well, I'd just be afraid if he's in it, it's gonna change. Like, it's gonna turn into like some kind of like action, or not action, but like kung fu. Gotta have Jason Statham fighting shit.
Well, that's the fun of it. Is that you would finally have someone who would be able to, instead of just running around screaming Optimus, you know, every 3.5 minutes, and just kind of lucking out of the situations that you're in.
Yeah.
The way Shia LaBeouf's character, and it's fine. I'm not downplaying that. I think it would be wonderful to kind of flip that and have someone who can take care of themselves and can literally, you know, legitimately kick ass alongside the robots. But at this point, if you keep all the good voice actors and stuff, why can't you just have a full-on no people version of Transformers movies?
Yeah, you know, I was kind of wondering that when I watched it last week. Because the movie is, I mean, the robots were entertaining. Cause it, I mean, like, how they made it, what I appreciated about it, which I'll talk about later during my little review, is that it kind of resembled and reminded me of the cartoon itself. You know, like the little quirks and the goofiness and how they filmed it. So,
sure.
Yeah, I could totally see a, you know, maybe they go to a different planet or something.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, the universe is fairly large. I mean, the junk box actually came from an entirely separate planet than the original peoples.
Yeah, but the next piece of news is apparently, you know, with the vampire flicks and TV shows coming out, apparently Sigourney Weaver is taking her shot with a film called Vamps, and it has Alicia Silverstone and Kristen Ritter from Breaking Bad and Malcolm McDowell. And I, you know, I was looking at it, and, you know, at a glance, you know, I was looking at the first picture, and I thought, oh, who's that? Who's that foxy beast? And then, lo and behold, it's Sigourney Weaver. So, okay, now, were you a Sigourney Weaver fan back in the 80s?
I was. I liked her in Working Girl, as well as I liked her in Alien, and I liked her in Ghostbusters. I also liked her, I also thought she kind of demonstrated some of her acting chops in Gorillas of the Mist. So
now, looking at these pictures, which we will post on the site, how does she look now? Like, do you think she looks, you know, she aged well? I suppose.
Yeah, I would say sure.
I'm only asking this because I was reading the comments, and I was reading up, I guess, different forums and whatnot about her and about this film, and people just have, like, people have been really criticizing the hell out of her. And I think she looks great. Actually.
I personally think she looks good. I'm looking at the photos right now, and again, don't worry, we will have the links for you so that you can follow along as well. The first still is the second large photo at the bottom, and that's kind of actually the way she's posed and her hair teased out, kind of reminiscent of how she looked in towards the end of Ghostbusters there. And,
oh yeah. Yeah.
But the first still with it's just her and I believe that's Kristen Ritter right there, right in the first photo.
Yeah, it looks like her.
But even there, I mean, she looks like she's aged well. I can't really find any fault in it, in terms of just general appearance.
Yeah, I mean, I was just wondering, just out of curiosity. In the next piece of news, Paul Feig, the guy who directed Bridesmaid, which I have yet to see, is interested in directing a Bridget Jones's Diary Part 3. In James Bond news, because Bond 23 is in development. Okay, so they have a new Moneypenny, person playing Moneypenny, Naomi Harris. Have no idea who she is. But
what happened to the Moneypenny that... Is this the same Moneypenny from Casino Royale? Or they got another one since then?
I don't know. I think she's a new one.
Holy crap. Okay.
But Javier Bardem is confirmed to co-star. Now, if Javier Bardem plays the villain in the film, I will love it. Okay, so apparently Sam Mendes, Kate Winslet's, is separated.
Estranged spouse.
Yeah, exactly, estranged spouse. It's supposed to be directing, at least that's what I've been hearing and reading about. And I hear that they're going to go back to the more traditional Bond film setup. Because as much as I like Casino Royale, there's so much of, I think there's so much of like the dramatic take you can take for a Bond film. However, I think it worked very well for that storyline.
Well, and I know, but everybody always gives Quantum of Solace a hard time because it was so serious.
I hated Quantum of Solace.
Why? It was so good. It was such a great story, and you finally got to see the true depth of James Bond, and they finally made it like the books. Oh, God, I know you're not supposed to do that, but...
No, because the camera was doing the whole shaky thing through the entire
movie. Well...
And the action was so, like, fast cut, and there was no time to absorb and actually enjoy it. And I mean, that's what really bothered me. I mean, there was one scene from the movie and that I can remember really enjoying, and that was when they were, I guess, at an opera, in an opera house, mm-hmm. I suppose, and he's up, I guess, like with a gun about to like snipe people, and he's talking to somebody, and as he's talking to him, he's like, okay, well, you know, he's like, oh, well, you're James Bond. He's like, well, I'm in the building. And he's like, oh, well, I'm going to get out of here. He's like, well, I wouldn't move if I were you. I have a, you know, I have a something-something gun pointed right at you with a, you know, with a scope. Now, I thought that whole scene was pretty interesting because it took their time to kind of build up the tension. And, you know, it led up to the action. But everything else was just really, like, fast-cutting. And, you know, just to me, I suppose it really wasn't that appealing. I mean,
I don't know. I've watched the movie several times. I haven't watched it in a couple of years. I'll go back and watch it again, but I don't know. I really liked it. It was so nice to see a darker, grittier side to James Bond, and something that they just started touching on in GoldenEye, but never really explored. And to see the recovery from what happened in Casino Royale and how it actually affected him. And the way Daniel Craig played it, I loved that movie. And it's such a bummer that so few people did. At any rate.
Space Invaders will probably be a movie.
Didn't they do that already?
Oh, so you mean every other alien invasion movie. Yes, you are correct.
Yes, I was just making sure. Didn't they do that already?
Yeah, well, actually, they remade the movie about 800 times.
Okay.
Since, I'm sure... Probably 1943. You know, I think the movie's been remade.
Actually, sure, Day of the Earth Stood Still.
Exactly, and I'm pretty sure the game is based off the movie. Okay, well, in the Hobbit news, I don't know if you know this, but Peter Jackson, for his films, especially with Lord of the Rings and also King Kong, while he's doing the movie, he likes to release these video blogs to kind of, you know, I guess keep his fans updated about the production process. And
it's interesting that you mentioned that. I actually watched the first, I don't know, it was probably 10 or 12 minutes pre-production one where he was taking us through the sets, and it was like, you know, and they were showing this, like, you probably haven't seen this since, you know, the final scenes of Return of the King, and, you know, it's been a real project to, you know, recreate these sets exactly as you saw them. And then he was like, but now you'll get to see them from different viewpoints. And so I did not know that he did that. I was really surprised. It actually got me interested in seeing The Hobbit.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome. Well, I bring this up because blog number 2 was released, I guess it's 3 days ago.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's definitely worth checking out. I mean, despite the one movie of Peter Jackson's I didn't care for, which was The Lovely Bones, I mean, visually the movie's entertaining, and Stanley Tucci plays an awesome bad guy. Great performance. But I mean, it's just Peter Jackson just has this quality, just adds this quality to his films that whenever you watch it, you can just tell this guy just loves to tell the story. He just loves to bring, you know, the cinematic experience to these special stories. And I really highly recommend everybody to watch these video blogs, just so you can see how, you know, just how he is on set and how he is working with these actors, because it's just really cool to watch and a lot of fun.
So what did you not like about The Lovely Bones?
I just didn't, I mean, it's just a story of it. I just didn't care for the story too much. I mean, it's just the story. I mean, the filming of it didn't, you know, it wasn't bad. I mean, visually, the movie's terrific. Did you check it out? Did you watch it?
I had not. The only questionable element to that, the only reason I didn't initially even check it out, was I saw it was Peter Jackson, so I was immediately, you know, piqued my curiosity, and then, wow, Stanley Tucci is the bad guy, okay. You know, so I'm definitely down with that. And then Mark Wahlberg, and I was like, not sure if that was the best casting choice for this dark movie. And so I wasn't really sure if I wanted to check it out, and then just never got around to it, so.
But yeah, it's worth watching for Stanley Tucci, I would have to say. So, but yeah, I mean, just everybody, just please check it out. I mean, it's really cool, really, really a lot of fun, and it'll probably just, I mean, if you're not looking forward to The Hobbit, after watching these first two video blogs, I'm pretty sure you'll probably change your mind, you know, because you'll look forward to it after. Just, I promise you, just watch it. In I think the second to last, actually third to last movie news. Apparently, this is a rumor that The Dark Knight Rises, the third Batman film, the teaser trailer might be attached to Harry Potter in the Deathly Hallows Part Dos. So we shall see if that is the case. Actually, I'm going to save the best for last. TNT greenlights a new Dallas series. So we'll. We'll see. We'll see where that one.
See again. Family. Same thing.
They have pictures up. I mean,
I know. No, but it's the same thing as when we were talking about all the other reboots.
Larry Hagman looks like he should be selling carpet.
Oh, is he actually in it?
Yeah. He's in. Yeah, him and Patrick Duffy both.
Really? Do they reprise their original characters?
Yeah, and Linda Gray is in it as well.
So, but it's a reboot or is it a continuation?
It's a continuation.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, then I withdraw my previous comments. I did not realize that they were continuing on.
Yeah, it's a...
So, outstanding. All right, then.
So, yeah, we'll see how that one goes. And last but not least, so whenever we first got on for the pre-meeting for this program, I made Matt watch a trailer for this glorious little film called Jack and Jill. Starring Adam Sandler, directed by Dennis Dugan, who has directed every single frickin' Adam Sandler movie for the past 10 years, it seems like. I'm a fan of Adam Sandler's early work. You know, I liked Waterboy, you know, growing up. I loved Happy Gilmore. Those are fun flicks. But it just seems like Adam Sandler is going down the slippery slope of box office cliche with this film. So, you guys check it out and let us know if you will spend $9.50 to go check out the movie or if you'll skip it.
That's right. But when you see this trailer, you will understand why I punished him by making him go second for the news this time.
Yes, you will see. But, it was totally worth it.
Oh, well, good. As long as it was worth it. So, ending the news, moving along to 3 Squared. So, for 3 Squared this week, what we had come up with was you wanted to find an actress that has never been nominated for an Academy Award. Your favorite actress never nominated for an Academy Award. And as we all know, some people are just, you know, eager little beavers who just, the names just come right to their forefront as soon as we announce the category.
Like,
so, yeah, like, you know, certain other people who help host this podcast who will not be mentioned. Okay, I'm not going to name names or anything, but,
I'm such a dick.
you know what? Yes. Anyway, so your choice was, sir.
So I chose the lovely Mia Farrow, and she is just such a terrific actress. So the one movie I chose to encompass Mia Farrow's stellar acting, that, you know, I mean, whenever I think of like great performances, Mia Farrow really doesn't, you know, pop up to be the leading, you know, person in that category, but she just kind of has this eerie, charming zing to that, you know, that she adds to her performances. And so Rosemary's Baby is, I believe that was her first hit film that she made, and it was Roman Polanski's first U.S. box office. And it is such a creepy frickin' film. I mean, yes, this is the movie where she gives birth to a demon child. The film is terrific, and I highly, highly, highly recommend it. Ruth Gordon won the Academy Award for it, but yet Mia Farrow did not. That is a shame. That is horrendous. Okay, so the second film I choose that, again, encompasses Mia Farrow's acting ability, that should have won her an Oscar, even though it really was more of a vehicle for Robert Redford and Bruce Dern, is The Great Gatsby. The Great Gatsby would be the film. Now, the third film I choose for Mia Farrow is, it to me, it is the perfect Woody Allen film. I mean, there are many great, great Woody Allen films, but I think this is one of his perfect films. And I do hope, Matt, that you have seen it. It's called The Purple Rose of Cairo. Not only does the name have such a kick-ass frickin' like name to it, I mean, it's just bitchin', but it also has Jeff Daniels in it. And to anyone who doesn't remember the film, it came out in 1985, or who hasn't seen it, the film is set in 1930s New Jersey during the Depression, and it's about a woman who keeps going, who wants to escape life and escape the abuse of her husband. So she just goes to the movies. And she loves seeing the romantic, swooping love films that, you know, the big romances of the time. Well, one of the films that she loves is The Purple Rose of Cairo, and Jeff Daniels plays the hunky lead actor in it. Well, during one performance, something happens, and suddenly Jeff Daniels stops the movie, and this is Mia Farrow watching it, and he just turns toward the screen and makes eye contact with Mia Farrow in the audience watching him. And suddenly, he just walks through the screen and right towards her. It is such, I mean, the movie is romantic, and I'm a guy, and I'm not a sap. I'm not a big fan of romantic films, but this movie is just smart. It's just so, so, so smart and so entertaining that I could not recommend it, you know, any highly. It's just such a great film, and I highly, everybody should watch it, damn it.
I have not seen that particular Woody Allen film, so I will definitely have to
watch it, damn it.
Check it out, damn it.
Exactly.
All right, excellent, excellent choice, and glad that immediate cognitive recognition that you had paid off for you. Mine took a little bit more research and thought. My choice actually was Maureen O'Hara, and I did actually research this for those who would listen and think of her and go and recognize her and go, wait a minute, no, come on. She didn't win. She didn't even get nominated. Nothing. Movies that she was in, people got nominated around her, won all the time. The movies were nominated for Best Picture or whatever. Nothing. She never got nominated, which is just a damn shame. And she had a prolific career. She's actually still alive. For those who might wonder whatever happened to, she is currently 90 and will be turning 91 on August 17th, should she make it. And she has quite a lot of quite a wide body of work to choose from. I mean, everything from Hunchback of Notre Dame, How green was my valley? Things like, you know, Spanish Main, gosh, Rio Grande. No, just tons of Quiet Man. You know, McClintock, Big Jake. I mean, there's a Spencer's Mountain, Parent Trap. You know, she's just done also a Miracle on 34th Street. All these wonderful movies that she's been. So it was really hard to pick three, and I'm going with my gut on this one. First one, I'll do them in chronological order. From 1941, How Green Was My Valley, and just an amazing movie. There's actually a scene where she comes running up through kind of a quite a meadow, but runs up through a yard or whatever. I guess we'll just call it a meadow for lack of a better term. And she runs up to the gate area and opens and waves at the, you know, at the camera. And it's like one of those iconic shots that they always use in all of the freaking movie montages that they have. So, you know, definitely something to check out. Great story, besides. And then we have The Black Swan from 1942. It's probably the, for me, one of the consummate swashbuckling pirate pictures from that era. I know Burt Lancaster did quite a few of them, and some people might disagree with me on that. Tyrone Power, you know, Anthony Quinn. It's just great, you know, great movie, and I really enjoy it. Last but not least, and it was really hard to get down to this, but damn it, I'm going with it, even though I've already talked about it before. The Quiet Man. Her role of Mary Kate Donaher. Is just ridiculous. It's just such a good role, and I am most surprised of everything that she's done that she didn't get anything for this one, and that's kind of sad. And that's from 1952. Released in 52, it was filmed in 51.
Cool.
There you go. That's my 3 squared. That was my favorite actress, who has never gotten even a nomination for an Academy Award. For next week, since we are doing our After Dark edition. That's right, yeah. Don't you love our musical renditions here? This is how we do the transitions, people. Get with it. 3 squared for next week. It's our favorite actress known for their sex scenes. That's right, ladies and gentlemen.
Ooh, risque.
Known for their sex scenes, risque, and actually, because, you know, for guys, and now you understand why the research for this is gonna be
awesome.
Yeah, it's gonna be, you know, we are committed to doing our finest work here separately.
I gotta update my Netflix to like unlimited DVDs at a time.
That's right. Yeah, so that was 3 squared.
Way cool.
To go, way to go. All right, now, let's jump down to the fun stuff, the meat of the show. We had 3 movies this time. Well, actually, a fourth, because someone finally got around to seeing Transformers. So, yeah, we'll make sure Tim gets to talk a little bit about Transformers. We had Horrible Bosses. That was the movie we went and saw. Went to the midnight of that last week. And then my movie that Tim recommended to me was Brick, and the movie that I recommended to Tim was No Escape. So, let's just start from the top. Transformers, what was your take on that?
Yeah, you know, there was a little hesitation going into Transformers. We both agreed that the second one sucked. It was horrendous. And at least my expectations for the third one was low, even after, you know, the praise you had for it last week. However, the one thing that immediately, just kept me entertained and maybe, you know, pampered me into enjoying the film, I suppose, was the fact that this movie resembled the cartoon so much, like the cartoon from the 80s, the quirkiness, the funniness, the comedy, even the action, even resembled a lot of the classic cartoon, and I appreciate that. So that alone, to me, made the movie pretty enjoyable, as well as the comedy and the wit, especially delivered by Shia LaBeouf. However, the one thing that really pissed me the hell off was the certain music that they use in the film. because at least throughout the beginning of the movie, the character Sam Witwicky goes on for goes into these various job interviews. Well, every time the movie cuts back to him from a previous scene, every single time there's like a new like song placement of some kind of really crappy teen acoustic-y sappy dumb song. And it's just like, it's kind of like, you know, kind of like how product placement is for some movies. Just with a Michael Bay film, it's music placement. And just for the sheer fact of, you can just tell that they're just trying to promote this crappy music, just really kind of bothered me. And so luckily it's only for the first maybe 45 minutes of the film this actually happens, until like the real action, the actual story takes place. But besides that, I thought the movie was entertaining. I mean, it was just a really good popcorn flick, and I would recommend it to all you action CGI aficionados out there. So I wasn't disappointed, but I wasn't too incredibly impressed.
All right, fair enough. I did not notice the music aspect. Interestingly enough, did not really pay that close attention to it. Typically, I do. Music, you know, obviously mentioned it last week with I Saw the Devil. You know, it was something that really stuck out to me. I think I've gotten so used to Michael Bay noise that I pretty much just either try to listen to what dialogue I can and then just make sure that it makes sense with the action I'm watching. So I don't typically pay too much attention to the music anymore. So, Horrible Bosses.
Yes.
We have them, we deal with them, we know them. We've been them, maybe.
Yeah, and surprisingly, this movie is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Well, I don't mean surprisingly, like, man, how the hell did this happen? But it's interesting, you know, because I wouldn't think like a movie like this would actually be considered certified fresh, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I could see. Yeah, I mean, I could definitely agree with that. I am also refreshingly surprised to see that the movie is doing well, because it is a good movie. It's a good movie in terms of entertainment. It's a good movie in terms of the execution of the humor, and it's a good movie for the audience it's aimed at. It doesn't necessarily try to be anything more than it is, and that is always a good thing. To know your place, know what you're trying to do, aim it towards the people you want to aim it to, and hit a home run with it. And I think that they did. I know I laughed out loud, literally, and may have annoyed the piss out of Tim, because this was our true first movie watching experience together. And the only problem I had with the movie, for me, was that, you know, it's obviously a bumbling kind of a comedy movie, full of misfortune and misadventure that, you know, culminates in one final big, huge plot advancement that then summarizes the movie. And I don't want to give anything away, but there are points, and so it has a pretty formulaic procedure here. It's, you know, introduce the characters, introduce the problems, give the setup for the actual events of the movie, and then execute the actual plot. And whenever they, you know, and it's that execution of the plot where I really only come to have any issue with the movie, and that's in executing the plot, they come up with serious obstacles that they then comedically resolve. And whenever they would put up a serious obstacle to try and actually advance the movie, it brought all the comedic resolutions to a screeching halt, and you kind of had to start over again. And then relatively quickly, usually within 4 or 5 minutes, you're laughing again and getting back into it, and then they'd present something else that would then kind of bring it to a crashing halt. And you'd have to, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, and then, you know, you're laughing again. So that was really the only thing, and it kind of slowed down the movie. And it's not a pacing thing, because it did follow logically how the movie should play out. It just, I think maybe it could have been written a little bit better.
Yeah, Yeah, I have to agree with that. And also, the actors are really talented, and they're really, really funny. And my spiel with the movie was that I just thought they could have done so much more. You know, like I think they could have been let loose to do a little bit more, maybe like improv even. Like it seemed like the stuff they showed in the bloopers was funnier than what they actually said, you know, I guess in the final cut. And sometimes it's just, to me, it's funny how, you know, how that kind of works out, which goes to show how a movie can be different in a, you know, I guess maybe like a during the dailies or at a screening, but if you go and see it in a live audience, it's just like a totally different vibe and whatnot.
Oh, absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and so it just felt like that, you know, when the jokes succeeds, they're, you know, they really succeed. But there were one too many times I felt where they really didn't quite reach the expectation that, you know, the jokes actually deserve. And, yeah, that's just the only thing I have against it. On a positive note, Jennifer Aniston is hot as balls.
Oh, dear Lord, yes.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
She is a fox.
Yeah, would have liked to have seen naked Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, the movie was, okay, so the movie was a Jennifer Aniston tease throughout the entire movie.
But I mean, that definitely added to it. That definitely, for me, added to the enjoyment of it.
I mean, I would agree. I mean, they didn't have, a whole lot of, you know, like, sex and shit. But, you know, it was just, you know, it's just like, oh, come on. You can't just move it over.
I know, just a little bit, just one flash. Yeah. Give me 2 seconds, you know, it'll be great.
Somebody turn on a jet.
Yeah.
But, oh, yeah.
A hair dryer. A jet. You could have done it with a hair dryer. You'll understand if you see the movie. But I would say, to sum up, it is a very entertaining movie, very fun movie, worth seeing, especially in the movie theater.
With
because,
a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, because the vibe of the theater with the laughter and stuff will really increase the enjoyment of it. If you wait for DVD, you're not going to be disappointed. I will say it's going to be much like The Hangover and has no replay value. Once you've seen it, you've seen it. So there you go. A movie ticket's $9.50. $10 at night, a DVD, unless you rent it, of course, is, you know, $20. So cut your price in half, go see a movie theater.
There you go.
Let's see. So my movie that I recommended to you, sir, was No Escape.
Yes.
And with the marvelous Ray Liotta. And let me know, what did you think, sir? Lay it on us.
Okay. So I was recommended No Escape.
Escape.
Escape. Directed by Martin Campbell. And people might be like, huh, where did I hear Martin Campbell? Where did I hear that name? Well, he directed such films as Green Lantern, that just came out. Edge of Darkness, it came out a couple years ago. Casino Royale, the two Zorro movies. GoldenEye. And, just a number of other films and TV shows especially. So he's a very talented filmmaker. Well, the film, No Escape, came out right before they made GoldenEye. It stars Ray Liotta and Lawrence Hendrickson, Stuart Wilson, Kevin Dillon, Ian McNeice, and also Ernie Hudson. So basically, the movie is set in the future, I believe the year 2022, and Ray Liotta is sent to this high security prison. Well, when he's there, he kind of causes some problems. So the warden sends him on to this island where they basically leave him. Well, on this island, it's made up of a group, two groups of people. One group are the evil kind of, you know, the rugged Mad Max type of, you know, want to kill people group. And the other type of group of people is the Ernie Hudson group, where they're like, oh, hey, you know, come over and defend, help us escape this island and live on to freedom and whatnot. The very patriotic, I suppose, type of group. Yeah, the good guys, there you go. And these two camps are all men, and they're all convicts that were that have been left there. And basically, the warden, the whole, scheme of the wardens is that he basically wants these two groups to wipe each other out. just to kill each other. I don't really think there's really no reason, really, just for death and fun. Now, before I proceed, I have to warn the audience that I watched this movie in a
inebriated state.
Well, I like to call it an UTI vision, under the influence vision. Only because, well, the movie sits at a 5.8 rating on IMDb, and, you know, it just seemed like one of the movies that you just needed to, you know, enjoy it with a little, should I say, enhancement. But on the plus side, and I mean this as a really big plus, the bad guy who played by Stuart Wilson and the character's Walter Merrick, he's a highly entertaining bad guy, and he had terrific lines, and he was just a lot of fun. And all in all, despite my strange, incoherent criticism of it, I would recommend the movie as just kind of a fun little 90s action flick. And any of these movies set in the future where they actually use models, you know, where they actually use like models of the futuristic cities and whatnot, I think they're totally worth it, because it's kind of like the dead sci-fi cinema that I actually still enjoy, like Total Recall, for example. I enjoyed it. I'm glad I was able to scope this film out.
Outstanding. All right, well, I had a thoroughly different experience with Brick. So Brick was the movie that I had that was recommended to me, and it stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt. The only other people that I think would be readily recognizable would be Lucas Haas and Richard Roundtree. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays a dude named Brendan Fry, and he is a student, a high school student, and he has to solve the mystery of the death of his ex-girlfriend. Now, when the movie opens up, it very quickly just... It drops you basically right into the action. And when I start watching it, two things come immediately to mind. One, and it's and which is interesting, because this movie was made back in 2005... Joseph Gordon-Levitt is getting way too old to play high school people. and this was 6 years ago. And I don't know, he looked obviously older than everybody else. And I still got into it, but that was just something that kind of nagged at me a little bit.
Yeah.
Throughout the movie. So that was the first thing. The second thing was that I didn't know if this was supposed to be funny or not. Because of the writing. And I was like, wow, is this satire? Are they making fun of, you know, Sam Spade movies or something? Because of the way they talk. And what I realize is that it's a throwback. It's literally an homage to the old film noir detective stories. And but what they did was they had an excellent juxtaposition of the lingo that they used back in the 30s and 40s for those movies, and the teenager speak that they used in this movie. And it's funny because kids, you know, always have their own words. They always have their own phrases and the way they talk. And to some people, it can seem like, you know, a serialized comic in the way that they talk. And they did that, but to the effect of the classic noir film style. And so once I understood that it was not poor writing, and that it was not a joke, but that's how they were advancing the story and actually running it, it became very good, and I, you know, I got it, and it took me about, I don't know, 10 or 12 minutes, definitely no more than 15, to actually get that's what they were trying to do here, and it was really good. The only thing that I didn't like was it got a little too twisty-turny for its own good. And unnecessarily so, because anyone who understands the classic film noir style, and for those who may not understand that, but think for those of the gamers of today, think L.A. Noir, the Sam Spade kind of stuff. You know, she was a tall drink of water. It was a dark and stormy night, and walked. You know, just think about those kinds of things. And you understand that it doesn't necessarily need to be so difficult and so twisty-turny. And they just went a little overboard with that in the plot. Does it take away from the movie? A little bit, but not so much that it that it ruins the movie and makes it overly long. And I thought that the ending was just perfect for paying homage to that. And as a matter of fact, according to Wikipedia, they actually describe it as a neo-noir, which is basically they're trying to, as a way to almost reestablish that style of filmmaking. And this does a good job. So, good call, sir.
Good. I'm really glad you liked it. I was surprised. I had an ex-friend of mine suggest it because we were trying to make our own little independent film. He was like, "Man, yeah, this is the model of how you can make a film, a really good entertaining movie on a really really low budget." And yeah, and you know, they knocked it out of the ballpark. And you know, your criticisms are pretty spot on, and I will definitely have to agree completely.
Oh, well, outstanding. I'm glad that we came to terms on that one. Awesome. All right. Well, let's see here. So we have we're getting close to wrapping it up here. We got Twilight Zone, and in the interest of full disclosure, I totally jacked up Twilight Zone. I forgot to watch Walking Distance this week. So, Tim, tell us, give us a once-over of Walking Distance. I will then come back next week and...
With the entire rest of the first season of Twilight Zone.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so Walking Distance is episode 5 of our Twilight Zone coverage of season 1. And it's basically about I think he was an advertising agent. Advertising agent Martin Sloan sits in his car. I believe that was like the opening line to it. But it's basically about this guy named Martin Sloan, a very nostalgic guy. He goes back to visit his hometown, where he just has all of these, you know, where all these memories just come to mind, and he can't help but tell everybody there about his memories, you know, about him as a kid going to this ice cream shop where he would only pay 10 cents for 3 scoops of ice cream, and oh, well, they don't do that anymore, 10 cents, and... Well, he goes to that same ice cream shop where he's telling this story to the guy, and he orders 3 scoops of ice cream, and he's like, "Well, was it going to be $1?" And he's like, "No, it's 10 cents." And he's like, "Oh, this is great." And it's just weird stuff kind of like that progresses where, you know, he starts, you know, remembering that stuff, you know, like it's starting to happen around him as if he never left. Ooh, creepy. Well, he goes to this one kid, you know, this young boy, and somehow the little boy finds out the guy's name, and he says, "Martin Sloan." And he's like, "Oh, you're not Marty Sloan. Marty Sloan is blah, 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 blah." So it turns out, oh, there's another Marty Sloan. Well, the guy doesn't really, you know, he doesn't really go into detail about, "Oh, well, this is weird." He just thinks, "Oh, it's a coincidence, I suppose." So he's walking around, and he's like, "Oh, that's the... you know, that's the gazebo. That's the area where I used to carve my name." And well, he sees a little kid up there carving his name. So he runs up to the little kid, and lo and behold, that's a kid carving the name Martin Sloan. And it turns out that is him. So basically, Martin Sloan, when visiting the town, he ends up visiting the town 25 years prior, where he, in fact, was a little kid. And... It was definitely a strange episode, but it wasn't, you know, like a heart-grabbing episode. It wasn't, you know, like sad, nor was it really creepy. It was just strange. Was it entertaining? Yeah, I'd say it was entertaining. Just strange. So that's kind of where, you know, where I will leave it off. But people ought to watch it. I mean, it's definitely good writing. Very good writing.
All right. Well, very cool. Very cool. So now I can't wait. I'm definitely sorry I missed it. So it'll be nice to talk about that next week. The movies we're watching this week. So what we're watching this week here, what did you recommend for me, sir?
Rubber.
Outstanding. Which, despite the innuendo of the name Rubber, it is actually about apparently a killer tire, which... you know, I saw the trailer, looked really weird, but also really interesting, just never got around to seeing it, so I'm glad Tim's recommending it to me, because it gives me an excuse to watch it. The movie that I recommended for Tim is actually a documentary about whistling and a specific whistling competition that's held in the States called Pucker Up. This documentary was, I stumbled across it months ago and literally nothing better to do, and was like, huh, really? Whistling? Okay. Truly, they will make a documentary of anything. And hit play, and I was thoroughly entertained. I could not believe how quirky, how silly, how funny, and how good it actually was, and how talented some of these people are. It is ridiculous. So, I'm really hoping that you're going to enjoy it. And then the movie we're watching together is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. That might be nice that you can follow up on the trailer to see if, in fact, the Batman teaser trailer's on there. So, cool. All right. Well, can you think of anything else that we need to cover?
God, no.
Outstanding. Okay. Well, then, I guess that's going to be it. And thank you for putting up with us, as usual. Just want to run down the list here. Got to thank our friends with Cries of Solace. As always, the music that you hear is provided by them. They are outstanding. Check them out at myspace.com/Cries of Solace, facebook.com/Cries of Solace. That's right. And
maybe Cries of Solace can do a rendition of that song.
That would be pretty spiffy. I'll have to ask them if they can do that. And then, of course, you can always follow us on Twitter, at the SLS Cast. You can send us an email at theslscast@gmail.com. Check us out on iTunes. Of course, you can always stop by slscast.com. And as soon as we get all of our artwork and all that stuff taken care of, I will make sure that the Facebook page gets up and kept going. So thanks again for listening. We appreciate it. We will catch you guys next week. Take it easy, y'all.
Adios.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.